What can we do about such a situation? Today, we have a Zen story, case number 25 in the Book of Serenity, called Yangguan's Rhinoceros Fan. The introduction to this story, I think of these introductions, these ancient introductions, as a way to kind of get us in the mood for the story that's about to be told. It goes like this. Oceans and lands without bound are not apart from right here. The events of infinite eons past are all immediately now. Try to make someone present it face to face, and she won't be able to bring it out in the wind. But tell me, where is the fault? So this is how it is. Oceans and lands and towns and villages and mountains and stars and planets are not apart from right here. This is the all-inclusive, boundless here. And all these infinite past eons are all in the immediate now, the eternal, unchanging now. So everything and every time, every place is always here and now. This is like the perspective of Zen practice. It's hard to remember that, especially that we are always here and now. But even if we're here and now, try to make someone present this here and now, face to face, like express it directly and intimately, face to face, and he won't be able to bring it out in the wind. I think of the wind of the complexity of our daily life. It's hard to present this all-inclusive, eternal here and now way of being in the rough wind of living in this world. Isn't it hard? So this is the kind of warm-up introduction. So here's the story from ancient China. One day, Yangguan called to his attendant, saying, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." And the attendant said, "Actually, the fan is broken." And Yangguan said, "If the fan is broken, then bring me the rhinoceros." The attendant had no reply. These are the kind of stories that are part of our ancestral lineage, our Zen family. Talk this way. Sometimes we might still talk this way, but it sounds a little unusual. For one thing, what is a rhinoceros fan? I think even these ancient Chinese koan commentators weren't quite sure what a rhinoceros fan was. Like, some of the commentators said, "Oh, it's a, it's a fan with a handle made out of rhinoceros horn." But I like to think that the ancient Zen teachers weren't into using ivory products. But, you know, you never know. But it could be also the commentators said, it could be a fan, a paper fan, like Shakti has one, right? Do you have a fan? Is that a rhinoceros fan? It's like a fan, could be a fan like that with a painting of a rhinoceros on it. Or it could be a fan like that, or the electric kind that spins around to cool off rhinoceri. Sometimes they need that in the summer in Africa. My teacher, Tenshin Roshi, long ago, once commenting on this case, said, well, even if we don't know what a rhinoceros fan is, I'd like to actually start a rhinoceros fan club. And if he did, I'd join it. And that's, you know, as Zen practitioners, we're willing to, like, actually join a rhinoceros fan club without having any idea what it is. Some might call us stupid, but some might just call us willing. Some, I've also heard that in ancient China, that a rhinoceros horn was sometimes said to magically be able to part waters. Like you could part the Red Sea with a rhinoceros horn. I don't know where that story comes from. Also, in ancient China, apparently the rhinoceros horns have this power to enact mystical communion with Buddhas. So, I don't know about that kind of stuff, but maybe. Also, in Indian Buddhism, the Buddha sometimes talked about, a rhinoceros is like a solitary Buddha, just free and independent, like a rhinoceros. So in any case, we might imagine that this was summertime in China and it was hot. Actually, tonight is relatively cool compared to some Wednesday nights, right, in this room. Wearing lots of layers, it can get so hot in here. And we want something to cool us down. But even on an evening like this where it's not too scorching, the world is getting hot, is it not? The planet is getting hotter and hotter. The planet has never been this hot in recorded history. Anyway, that's kind of like a significant event. So we want something when it's hot, don't we, to cool down. We want some tool, some method, something, some way to respond to this heat. Bring me the rhinoceros fan. But the attendant says, but the fan is broken. I'm sorry. The fan is broken. So sometimes we're, oftentimes, I think, in our life, we're looking for some way to cool down. Please bring me some way I can cool down the situation. And our friend says, actually, any way that that I could think of to help cool down the situation is broken. nothing is going to work here. The thing you were expecting, you were fantasizing about me bringing this rhinoceros fan and you'd immediately be cool, but actually that fantasy is dashed on the rocks because this fan is broken and it's getting hotter. So how does one respond in such a situation? In this story, the Zen teacher Yangguan said, if the fan's broken, bring me the rhinoceros. After we let go of all the broken parts and realize that we can't fix it up and put it together, what's left? Bring me this rhino. What an unusual, creative, and unexpected, spontaneous response to the rhinoceros fan being broken. So we could think of some maybe other similar scenarios, like someone could ask, bring me the car keys. Actually, the car keys are lost. Well then, bring me the car. What kind of mind can respond outside the box? Someone might ask, bring me your mother. And I might say, actually, my mother's dead. Well then, bring me her heart. Bring me her true love. What is the source of my mother? What's the source of the rhinoceros fan? We get caught up trying to fix up the complicated pieces of this puzzle, but what's the actual nature of the puzzle? Bring me the earth. Actually, the earth is broken. Well then, bring me the space that created the earth. Bring me the space from which the earth formed. We have to think really outside the box for that kind of response. So there's nothing wrong with trying to fix what's broken, but sometimes, rather than putting all our attention into trying to fix what's broken, what about opening to that which is not broken? The inconceivable source that's never broken. And it's easy to forget that when we're trying to fix the broken pieces. But sometimes the frustration of trying to fix the broken pieces is exactly what reminds us of the unbroken totality, source. We might have to keep trying to put the pieces together, and as we're putting them together, they're breaking into smaller and smaller pieces. It might have to be like that before we actually give up trying to fix it. and turn around and face the rhinoceros. So, some stories about bringing the rhinoceros, there's infinite stories about bringing the rhinoceros, right? But here's an old Zen story from Japan. There was a Zen teacher named Tetsugyu, and he had a nice Zen temple in Japan, and there was a kind of warlord, a kind of government official who was kind of a temple donor of that place, and the very wealthy warlord collected tea bowls, and because he was a supporter of Tetsugyu in this temple, he once gave Tetsugyu a really precious antique tea bowl. And you know, in Japan, like, antique tea bowls are like the thing. Especially in the Zen world, they're very precious, and it's very old and made by a famous artist. And one day this warlord came for tea in Tetsugyu's temple, and Tetsugyu served him tea in this bowl that the guest had given him in the past, and they were both admiring the tea bowl after they drank tea, and this precious tea bowl. And Tetsugyu's Dharma buddy was kind of hanging out there too, and he had one of these sticks, and right as they were admiring it, he smashed the precious tea bowl into 100 pieces. And Tetsugyu, the Zen teacher, was like in shock and thought that he might be executed for this event. The tea bowl was broken. And yet the warlord, who was, you know, not one of these two Zen teachers, but he was able to bring forth a rhinoceros instead of saying, okay, that's it, get out of this temple, you owe me $10,000 for this bowl. Instead, he said, actually, the one who smashed the bowl, he actually said something right after he smashed it. He said, now look at the authentic tea bowl that existed before birth, as the pieces were all over the tatami mat. And so this warlord, when this happened, could immediately respond and say, if you wouldn't mind, Tetsugyu, if you could have someone glue the pieces together, at least most of them, which they do in Japan with tea bowls when they break, they sometimes use a gold mortar, and they look even nicer. They become more precious when their pieces glued together sometimes. So maybe even use something nice in a different color so we can enjoy the way that it cracked, and make a box for this tea bowl. And since you're a calligrapher, Tetsugyu, please calligraph on the top of the box the authentic tea bowl that exists before birth. So name the bowl like this, which they sometimes do in Japan. And I'm going to treasure it because I'm going to remember this time. And I'm even going to pass on this bowl before birth to my descendants, the warlord said. So he turned a broken situation into a creative response. I think that's kind of like bringing forth the rhinoceros. Another story that comes to mind that some of you might have heard. Norman Fisher has a new book called the world could be otherwise. And Nettie pointed out this story, so we heard this story in the climate change discussion group. I think for the same reason. A story about Robert Desnos. Does anybody know this story? This is I thought I was really moved by this story. Robert Desnos was a French surrealist poet, Jewish, during World War II. And he was part of the French resistance to the Nazi regime. And eventually he got captured and put in a concentration camp. And one day the truck came to collect these, a group of prisoners to go to the gas chambers from this one camp, and Robert Desnos was among them. And they traveled silently in this truck, knowing that their end was near. Nobody said a word. And they finally made it there. They got out. The gates were locked. The guards were taking them out of the truck. They were getting in line for the gas chambers when Robert Desnos, the surrealist poet, suddenly grabbed one of the prisoners' arms and pulled his hand up close and started reading his palm. And I don't know if he could actually read palms or if he just made this up, but he said, "Look here, you have this long lifeline. You're going to have a long, long life, and you're going to have 3 kids, and it's going to be such a happy life you have." And the person was like, "Really? That's great." And some of the other prisoners were like, "Read my palm too." And he started doing this with the other palms, like, "You're also going to have a really long life and get really wealthy." And they started getting ecstatic, and it was contagious, and all the prisoners were jumping up and down, getting their palms read, all with the prediction of long and happy lives. And meanwhile, the guards, who were very solemnly also waiting for this death to happen, didn't know what to do. They were shocked. They were dumbfounded. They'd never seen anything like this. They couldn't understand that these captives about to go to their death were so ecstatic and leaping around. And it kind of broke the mood. It shifted the mood in the whole camp. And the guards were, they sort of like, it snapped them out of their trance of like, "What are we doing?" At least enough that they could say, "Why don't you guys all go back in the truck and go back to the camp where you were?" Apparently this is a true story. They were sent back, and he survived to tell the story. He was never executed. Of course, many more were, but amazing. When everything seemed totally hopeless, their rhinoceros fan was completely broken, Robert Desnos could bring the rhinoceros and save beings. I mean, the stakes are kind of high here, right? There's many beings suffering with the situation of the broken rhinoceros fan. And, a present day example that's maybe not quite so dramatic, but a person I feel inspired by these days is Greta Thunberg, right? The 16-year-old Swedish girl who I think was the first one to kind of walk out of school in Sweden and kind of to make a statement about climate change, kind of a climate protest by leaving school once a week. I think, does anyone know she was the first one to do that? Kind of like, there's just going to be this climate strike coming up in September, right? And we might say that sort of began with Greta. She might have been, the many people involved in this kind of thing, but she was the first, as a young person, to say, doesn't anybody realize what's going on here? So anyway, the story that particularly inspired me is, you know, she became well known over the last year, right? And living in Europe, she was invited to travel around Europe and speak at these climate conferences. This girl is so wonderful that she was invited, and she's very confident young person. And so she would only travel by train to get to these conferences where other people were flying from country to country. She's like, well, this is what, we can't just like talk about this in some theoretical way. We have to actually live what we believe. That's what really impresses me about her. So then she's invited to America, and it's hard to take a train from Europe to America. So she said, okay, I'll come to the conference, but I'm going to sail on a zero carbon sailboat with solar panels. We're not even going to use fuel to cook our food on this boat. And instead of just taking a few hours, it's going to take 2 weeks to sail from England to New York. And she did it. Right? So to me, that also feels like bringing a rhinoceros when the situation is sort of like, I can't speak at a conference because I can't refuse to get there, or I'll just have to fly like everybody else. Instead of, who would have thought there's another way to actually get there if one's very patient and has some extra time? She had to take some time off school, but was able to do this. So there's infinite ways to bring the rhinoceros when the fan is broken. So back to the kind of old Zen responses. For one thing, the original story says, when Yangguan says, bring me the rhinoceros, the attendant who said the fan was broken had no reply. And in Zen stories like this, there's often no reply. What could he do? And sometimes that's kind of criticized, but sometimes it's said that's the best response. It's the most complete response. In this case, the commentator actually says, the attendant had no reply. After all, he had hit upon the true way by way of the false, or he had hit upon the true by way of the false. It's just that he himself didn't know he had it, which I understand to mean he gave a perfect elephant with his silence. But he felt probably like, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to do. But in fact, in that case, that was a perfect expression of the unbroken source of the rhino itself, the unbroken, ever-present, all-inclusive, eternal, here, now, rhino in his silence. So that was one response. Then, as is the tradition, other people in China heard about these stories, and they would, you know, after the fact, the stories would start circulating around China, and other people would kind of comment on the stories after the fact, other Zen teachers. So it kind of builds up books and things like this, right? So, Zufu, Zen teacher Zufu, when he heard about this story and heard, if the fan's broken, bring me the rhinoceros. When Zufu heard this, he drew a circle and wrote the word rhino in it. And this commentator liked that response too. Partly because it includes the endless boundless, edgeless circle of indescribable reality, along with a word, the kind of union of an unbroken circle, and this kind of broken ink written letters made of separate lines. When another teacher, Totsu, heard this story and this line, well, if the fan's broken, then bring me the rhinoceros. Totsu said, I don't decline to bring it out, but I'm afraid that the horn on the head will be imperfect. And Shui Do, another teacher, heard that response and said, I want the imperfect horn. Go ahead, bring it out with the imperfect horn. And then this commentator in this collection here, Wansong, says, I say, even if it's an imperfect horn, he can repair it. And he also says, this imperfect horn is a family heirloom. That's the way the ancients spoke. Tenkei Densong, another Japanese Zen practitioner, said it maybe more clearly like this. This refreshing fan has been used by everyone 24 hours a day. But they use it without being aware of it. If you get to know it, there is a timeless, boundless, pure breeze, clean and clear, and the horn of the rhinoceros stands revealed in its imposing grandeur right before your very eyes. Don't try to imagine what it must be like. That horn stands tall and sharp. It's a refreshing, reviving fan. And Wansong says, if I were the attendant, when I was told to bring the rhinoceros fan, whatever feathers, reeds, bamboo, silks, or yak hair came to hand, I would bring forth and give him the handle. Why? Because though there may be 1,000 varieties of technique, ultimately there are not 2 kinds of wind. Well, we might say there might be 1,000 types of fan to offer, but the wind that the fan produces, there aren't 2 types. Any questions? Comments? Rhinos? Anything? Yes?
Well, if you've never seen, if you think an elephant is preposterous, you've probably never seen a rhinoceros.
If you think an elephant is preposterous, you've never seen a rhinoceros. Yes. I once, just a couple of days ago, an old friend of my dad's at the retirement community likes to send to my dad lots of these photos of beautiful places or amazing, exquisite animals. So there was a photo of these amazing fish and birds. There really are some creatures that are look unbelievable, preposterous. And one of these photos was a fish with an elephant's trunk. an elephant's head. It even looked kind of wrinkled face. And I thought, really? I mean, some of these animals and birds and fish look very bizarre, but that one is just a little too much. And so my brother, who also got this photo, as the marine biologist said, that's Photoshop. That's too preposterous. You can't. There are no fish with elephant trunks. But it almost fooled me. But it was kind of like a, it was kind of someone's, whoever put this collection of photos together, it was their rhinoceros. It caught my attention. Yes?
So I would like to hear again the preliminary...
The introduction?
Yeah,
so the introduction as a kind of refrain now is oceans and lands without bound, without any boundaries, everywhere, are not apart from right here. The events of infinite eons past time are all immediately now. Try to make someone present it face to face, and he won't be able to bring it out in the wind. But tell me, where is the fault? I hear the wind in this case as being like the wind of our life, just like blowing us around. But it could have to do with the fan too, right?
Yeah, what I was thinking was a fan creates you.
Yeah.
We're creating.
Yeah.
Wind, our activity.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the situation. We can't do that.
Yeah.
The fan's broken.
Mm-hmm.
Our only activities are not solving what's happening.
Yeah. We won't be able to bring out this true rhino in the wind, or the rhino fan is just like shreds and pieces. It doesn't, the wind that can be moved by the fan cannot be actually moved here. Yeah. The wind itself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The eternal wind.
It's not separate from it, and that's where we need to look to invite it in.
Yes.
Rather than creating a wind which will not address the time.
Yeah, as Dogen says, though the nature of wind is permanent, you actually can't have wind without fanning. Also, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the earth and makes fragrant the cream of the long river. So though the nature, the actual nature of wind is unchanging and ever-present, permanent, you can't actually use or appreciate this wind without the activity of fanning. So bring me that activity of bring me that enlightened activity of the rhinoceros fan. Well, actually... I don't know what to do. I don't know how to act enlightened in an enlightened way. Well, then just bring me the wind itself. Bring the source of this activity, of this beneficial activity. Yeah.
Could you say it's the Sambhogakara
aspect? Could be. Yes.
Can I offer another little story?
Sure.
A contemporary story that I think is an example of what you're talking about.
Yes.
So this is a story that Pema Chodron told, that quoting an experience by Dharma's masters, who's I think he's still incarcerated, who's yes. a strong Buddhist practitioner. And he, in one of his little Dharma writings, wrote about how out on the yard there was this seagull that was injured, and a lot of the inmates were gathered around and were like taunting it and, you know, kind of torturing the bird, and, you know, it had a broken wing or something. And so Jarvis went over and he's like, "No, man, stop, stop." And they look at him like, "What?" And he goes, "That bird's got my wings."
Ah.
And they just like completely stopped. Like, and for days, he said to me, "Why did you say that? What did you mean?" You know, it's like he planted this koan out on the yard, and it just transformed, you know, that he saved the bird. But I'm also just thinking of the ripples into, you know, just that questioning.
That's a beautiful story. Thank you for that,
and,
yes.
And it really feels like it's like that story you told of the fellow in the prison.
Yeah.
Just that shifting the whole context.
Shifting the context. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Outside the box, the big picture, even beyond the picture. And spontaneous. A lot of these Zen stories celebrate. If we stop to think about it too long, the bird's already dead. Yeah. Or the prisoners are in the gas chamber. So, and we don't know if this rhinoceros will be beneficial because we don't have time to weigh the pros and cons, but just bring the rhinoceros. We know how it ends. And, broken. And yet, in playing that part, there's the rhinoceros.
Absolutely.
Majestic with its single horn shining in the summer breeze. Walking with heavy footsteps in the soft mud, roaring the rhino roar that only a rhino can roar.
Amen.
So I'll conclude with a Dylan song. This is kind of an unusual song. It's not one of his hits, but it's kind of later Bob Dylan. It's hard to get the voice exactly right. Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking, everything is broken. Broken bottles, broken plates, broken switches, broken gates, broken dishes, broken pots, streets are filled with broken hearts, broken words never meant to be spoken, everything is broken. Seem like every time you stop and turn around, something else just hit the ground. Broken cutters, broken saws, broken buckles, broken laws, broken bodies, broken bones, broken voices on broken phones. Take a deep breath, feel like you're choking. Everything is broken. Every time you leave and go off someplace, things fall to pieces in my face. Broken hands on broken plows, broken treaties, broken vows, broken pipes, broken tools, people bending broken rules. Hound dog howling, bullfrog croaking. Everything is broken. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.